Please keep us in mind when you're about to shop at Amazon. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the Amazon logo on that page, and it takes you right to the Amazon homepage. But that two-second detour by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon means we get a commission on whatever you buy on that shopping trip. So every single time you're going to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Rich, is Braun Strowman a babyface for turning in the Money in the Bank briefcase as an honorable person would and giving advance notice? Or is he a heel for fighting fire with fire and finding two people to align with against Roman in retaliation for what Roman and The Shield did to him the week before? It seems the Toronto crowd was siding with The Shield over Braun Strowman tonight. Your take?
My take is, one, Braun is not a very bright man because he probably should have just held on to that briefcase just in case until money in the bank, until Hell in a Cell. And two, I would usually say they would defer to Toronto being Bizarro World, but I'm assuming because of the booing, they'll just say it's a normal crowd.
That's right. So it was the intent of WWE tonight to turn Braun Strowman heel.
I think so. I think it was the intent was to put, again, similar to the first time they reunited The Shield, have them reunite, succeed, and then somehow fail after having succeeded. So give them a reason to kind of come back from underneath, but no one wants that, in my humble opinion. I think it's more or less that they want to see The Shield beat everyone up and kind of do what they were doing before.
I think Braun Strowman aligning with two obnoxious characters in Ziggler and Drew sent a message to the fans that Braun, yeah, we get that you're trying to pay back Roman for a 3-on-1 attack last week, but we're not so sure about you teaming up with these two. And it was an anti-Roman crowd, but not fiercely anti-Roman. And it was a pro-Braun crowd throughout, but not blow the roof off the place, at least as it came across on TV. And we have an on-site correspondent we'll be talking to in just a bit to get an in-person perspective on this. But I was fascinated. The idea that Braun Strowman would headbutt, and that's kind of a heelish move, but headbutt Roman Reigns, yell at Roman Reigns, headbutt him, even just looking down at him threateningly before that, and then power slam him, and the crowd wouldn't pop, but instead booed Braun or just felt torn and confused and sort of quiet is fascinating. Like, I don't know what happens next week, and I'm not sure WWE fully expected the crowd to comply, if that's the correct word, with a scenario where Reigns was, for the first time in a really long time, seen by, I think, the vast majority of the crowd as a sympathetic figure opposite of somebody who has been pretty wildly popular lately. I just think it's fascinating. I want to hear from listeners. Give us a call. 347-215-8558. Yeah, Rich, just another thought from you, and then we'll start taking calls.
Well, one thing I think is, and some of it, and I'll use a much used term here with the torch, too cute by half. I think one of the issues they had is while this was going on Twitter, Becky Lynch put up a photo of herself with the bar, which is the exact same situation, just a day removed from now, I'm sure. But having that pop up and then having Braun team up with Dolph and Drew makes me feel that I don't know if it isn't something they expected, and that's kind of their solution for problematic faces, quote unquote, going up against the faces that they don't want to accept or heels.
Yeah, this is something it's going to be a good conversation piece this week to kind of, last week we were trying to figure out how are we supposed to feel, and I don't know what this week told us yet. I need to talk it through in terms of what our confusion last week in terms of how we're supposed to feel, I thought was clear up until Braun refused to enter the ring after being legally tagged in by Roman at the end of the match. I thought, okay, they just want two big names, two titans to battle and clash, with the idea being that Roman Reigns would probably get the win. It would be Reigns proving something again to try to not push him down people's throats, but have Reigns be the fighting champion who fair and square beat a formidable opponent, to say the least. And I thought, okay, that's probably where they're headed, especially with Braun cashing in honorably. So this was an interesting twist at the end of the show. All right, so we'll be back in just a moment, and we will set the stage, introduce ourselves, and expand on this topic more. We have our on-site correspondent, Joel, waiting for us in Toronto. We'll get to him. And we got some emails, too, that'll steer us towards some other topics we don't get to here in the early portion of the show.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So we got callers lining up. Let's set the stage here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, covering the Monday, August 27th, 2018 edition of Monday Night Raw. And I'm joined by Rich Fan as co-host today. He of the PW Torch Livecast Deep Dive every Saturday, available at pwtorchlivecast.com. Or you can subscribe to the PW Torch Livecast podcast lineup free. Just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or your podcast app or just about anywhere else, including iHeartRadio. And also of the VIP session of the weekly midweek East Coast cast. Rich, welcome back to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
Always a pleasure, Wade, and thank you for having me on again.
Excellent. We'll talk more about your shows in a bit. Let's get to calls and see what our listeners think about this situation. We'll begin with area code 814, and then on deck is 815. 814, go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Brian from Marysville, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Brian, thanks for calling. So what's your take on tonight?
My take is it's probably idea 1001 on how to get Roman shared, and that they're taking the Hulk Hogan approach, and that or maybe to align him with someone that turns on him, much like Hulk Hogan had, say, like Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff turn on him in a tag team match against the Heenan family back in the mid-'80s, and also I'm watching me and Randy Savage turning on him, and that's how they gained sympathy for Hulk Hogan, is having all these wrestlers turn on him, and it made you feel sorry for the Hulkster. And I think maybe Vince is maybe trying to make the fans feel sorry for him and not everyone turning against him.
But did Hulk ever 3-on-1 attack the heel the week before and then have that heel, in an honorable gesture, give up an opportunity to blindside somebody and take advantage of them to win a championship, but instead honorably turn it in 20 days early? Like, that's the part that throws me off from the formula, Brian, that you describe, which is, yeah, just, you know, lead babyface with a so-called friend or ally or you know, fellow babyface at the very least, turning on him. It's over the course of 3 hours and 15 minutes, we saw two different Braun Strowmans. And if it was to, you know, if the idea as well was to lower Reigns' guard, I mean, he didn't need to turn in the Money in the Bank early to do that. I mean, they could have still had a tape. I don't know. Yeah, it's just, it's, I feel like there's some mixed signals, unless it was part of a master plan for Braun to get Reigns in a 3-on-1 situation in the ring to lower his guard. I mean, I think that's about the only, you know, because that was the excuse given to why Heyman and Lesnar went through their elaborate ruse was, well, just get Reigns with his guard down so you can pepper spray him. So anyway, Brian, anything else?
Well, to your points, the Hogan turning was a little bit different in that I should be turn on Hogan because of Elizabeth, but he thought they were having an affair, you know?
Yeah.
So there was, like, reasons, you know, why these baby faces turned heel. And I think Paul Orndorff, there might have been something with the posing or something, where Orndorff is jealous of Hogan was a better poser. So, you know, it's sort of, like, modified, you know, to fit the storyline, but still, there's always like a reason why these baby faces decide to turn heel for some reason.
Yeah. All right, Brian, I appreciate it. We got lots of callers lining up. I appreciate your input on this. We'll get our next opinion at 815, and then after that, 709 on deck. 815, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Spencer from Plainfield, Illinois.
Go ahead, Spencer. What did you think of Raw tonight? What's your take on the big angle, if that's what you're calling about?
Yeah. I think that Braun Strowman, he's been turning heel. To me, I think this slow turn ever since the Kevin Owens angle.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The way he treated Kevin Owens, I was feeling sorry for Kevin Owens because Kevin Owens never had any comebacks. He never got any retaliation as a heel. And then the babyface triumphs. It was always, all right, well, I'm out here. I'm going to destroy him and I'm going to laugh at him and that's it. And so I think tonight what he saw was I have to figure out a way to combat the Shield. And we can say, you know, Hell in the Cell, it keeps people out, but we've seen people enter in Hell in the Cell multiple times. So I think his thought process was, all right, I have to figure out a way to combat them in case anything happens. Okay, I got Drew and I got Dolph.
Rich, your take on that.
So I think that's a good point. I'm very confused because, one, if you're going to attack Roman the way he did, if this was an elaborate plot, you still have 20 days for him to recover. This wasn't a beating like, say, him flipping a ambulance or any of the other wild things he's done to Roman in the past before their matches. And two, if you are going to align yourself with Dolph and McIntyre, why? And it's all mixed, like you said, it's mixed signals. And if I were him, I would have just called my shot. I will see whomever is the champion at WrestleMania. And until then, I'll mess around and be the monster in the bank whenever and wherever I please.
Spencer, anything else?
I just had one more point to make about
sure,
it.
Yeah.
It seemed, especially last week and then at SummerSlam, like those were heelish things too, because he can say, you know, I'm out here and, you know, I'm out here and I'm going to cash in on whoever wins. Or, you know, I'm out here after the Finn Balor match. Well, a true babyface would not be like that because the man just had a 20-minute match with Finn Balor. And then you're saying that you're going to fight him face-to-face. Well, after he just fought Brock Lesnar and you were going to cash in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It seemed like it was just like a slow, it's been like a slow turn to turn him, because to me, I don't think he's had the same babyface reaction ever since the Kevin Owens situation.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Spencer. I'm glad you made it. I mean, a lot of talk, Rich, in recent weeks has been, well, I hope WWE doesn't like think Braun is being heroic. What has Kevin Owens done? I mean, I've commented on that. Callers have, co-hosts. It has seemed like Braun had a little bit more of an edge to him and you know, was making Kevin Owens sympathetic. We'll talk about KO later on, too. Kevin Owens, an enduring trend on Twitter tonight. It's crazy. Looking at the United States trends right now, Trish Stratus, number one. Braun Strowman, number two. Kevin Owens, number five. The Ascension, number seven. I would not have predicted that.
Wow.
That's going on Twitter right now in U.S. trends. So the Shield, by the way, not trending. Roman Reigns, not trending. Dolph Ziggler, not trending. So who knows how that stuff happens. But all right, so we got more calls coming up after this. This is a fascinating conversation so far.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
All right, we are back. Let's go to our next call, area code 709, and then on deck 502. Curious to get a variety of opinions here. 709, go ahead and state your first name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's Chris from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, Canada. How you doing?
Doing great. I did not hear where in Canada you're from.
Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. It's off the East Coast. If you've heard of the play Come From Away, that's where it's set.
Awesome. Awesome. Great. I'm glad you you said that. So, yeah, what's your take on what we saw tonight?
Well, I just attended my first ever Raw after 33 years a fan. I flew to Toronto just to see the show, and I'm a little impressed, I got to tell you, because Toronto is what we call a smart city, right? Like, it's one of those places where you can't normally put one over on the crowd. But they managed to make Braun Strowman a heel in the face of Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And that's just impressive booking right there because, like, Braun got 3-on-1 last week, should have made him a face. Comes back this week, and everybody is willing to cheer for the guy no matter what he does because it's Roman Reigns. And let me tell you, I'm sure your correspondent will confirm this. The roof almost came off that building tonight when he first came out. The boos were ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yet somehow by the end of the night, we're booing Braun Strowman. And I don't know, I wonder how they got to this point.
Chris, we lost his connection. Newfoundland. Cell service letting us down. I'll look for your number. So if you can hear us on the live stream, give us a call back. So we'll go to our next call. I believe I said 502 was next, and then 443 and 708 also on deck. 502, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Nick in Louisville, Kentucky. I don't know if y'all had seen this, but I mean, within a minute, WWE Australia tweeted out that it is going to be The Shield versus Braun Strowman,
Dolph. Wow.
And yeah. Drew and Dolph at the Super Showdown. So, I mean, that was just a quick moneymaker, and I guess they had to figure out a way to get a good match, but. I agree that I feel like they've been turning Braun heel for a while, but on the same token, I think it was horrible booking. I think once again, you turn two of your most over people in Becky Lynch and Braun Strowman into heels, and it makes no sense to me.
Well, the only sense it can make if that's where they're going. And by the way, if it works, then more power to them. I mean, there's going to be some people who resist, but if Vince McMahon can achieve through aligning Reigns with Seth and Dean and having Reigns walk the walk after talking the talk about being a fighting champion and can manage to, through Dolph and Drew, and by the way, Dolph and Drew get like six-man awards, bench player of the year, nomination for the WWE Oscars. Like, if they are a conduit, if they have done such a good job being obnoxious and arrogant in helping make the crowd in Toronto at least turn on Strowman willingly against The Shield. Credit to them, too. I thought Roman had a good night. I didn't think some of his lines that he did in the opening segment, I thought were a little clunky a couple times, but it was minor. But overall, I think he sort of feels like he's more in a comfort zone right now. And I think part of it is he always feels that way when he's with The Shield. You know, whether he's standing in the ring with them or the storyline includes them, I just think he gives off a vibe of being more comfortable, and I think he feels the fans are more receptive to him. Did you pick up on that, Rich?
Yes. In fact, I tweeted out my favorite part of Roman, which was the very beginning when he came out and saw the Roman Reigns-attired fan in the audience right by the ramp, and he fist-bumped him. And then an adult tried to, like, join in on the fist-bump, and he just shook his head at the guy and kept walking. he is definitely similar to when Nia Jax first won the title, he's in that confidence flow of, I know who I am. I know what I want to do. I really don't care. And it's in a way where it's less of a jerk and more of just being cocky.
Yeah.
And I think for Roman, kicking it back from jerk to cocky is something that's very good.
All right. Go ahead, Nick. Go ahead with any follow-up, additional comments.
I don't have anything, man.
All right, cool. I appreciate you calling and giving your take on this. Thanks for listening. All right, so we'll go to 44. By the way, if you want to get in line with Vomix, we'll try to get to as many of you as you can. 347-215-8558. You got to push 1 on your keypad, by the way, if you want to be a caller on the show. A bunch of you are on standby mode, but if you want to be on the show, be sure to push 1 after calling us at 347-215-8558. 443 up now, and then 708 and 706 also on deck. 443, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hello, this is Tim from Baltimore.
Hey, Tim.
Long-time VIP list. Long-time VIP member and listener, but first-time caller.
Awesome. Why'd you call tonight of all nights?
As my friend and I were saying, this was a Raw that just really kind of brought me into the whole show tonight, and I really liked how they formed the stable at the very end. And I don't know if you noticed, but like the way Dolph and Drew played it in the, as Braun was kind of turning, so to say, like Drew sold it as like, I'm ready to fight this guy if we need to. And Dolph was, of course, scared and ready to run. But as Braun kind of almost led them through his body language, like Drew took it as, well, I'll take any chance to beat up Roman I can. And Dolph was more just like, I guess so, too. And I think it was like, not a master plan, so to speak, at least for those two.
It's interesting because Coach asked, and sometimes Coach says things, you know, that he's sort of unscripted, it seems like sometimes. And Cole just sort of like, I don't know if he was annoyed or it was a line Coach was fed. From Cole's tone, it more seemed like he was there to kind of clean up the mess Coach made, because Cole said, well, we don't know if this was a master plan or not, but it doesn't matter. What matters is, you know, who's standing next to each other right now beating down the big dog. And he repeated that about a minute later, that, you know, we don't know whether this was something they concocted earlier in the day or during the week or just on the spot. What we're seeing is a game changer. So I think they're kind of overtly saying, don't worry too much about whether it was a master plan or not. Now, I can't imagine Dolph and Drew and Strowman, especially Dolph, given how much he talks, not at least claiming it was a master plan or talking about over, you know, how Strowman saw how good we were against Roman and he decided to join us, you know, on the spot. One or the other, you would think they'd have to own one of those two options on their next promo, if not on Twitter or WWB.com between now and next Monday.
Right, yeah, and I feel like, you know, the way, again, going back to how Dolph and Drew played it, like, I think you could argue the way Braun kind of was on the apron the whole match, and he's watching Dolph and Drew almost kind of dominate Roman most of the match, and, like, you know, maybe even in that moment you could say he was like, wow, they really got his number, maybe, so maybe these are the two I need, because the Shield clearly have my number.
Totally.
Well, even to your point, he said, tag me in and I'll end this right now.
Yeah, well, and Strowman is really fast, by the way. I don't know if you guys know that, but Braun is really fast. And when Drew took the cheap shot at Reigns at ringside, Strowman, I don't think, jumped off the ring apron and charged after Drew. Like, I think he stayed put. Now, I could be mistaken, but I don't recall Strowman coming to Reigns' aid. I think he just stood in the corner. Rich, do you remember any different?
No, he stood in the corner. You're right.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because considering 4 months ago or 2.5 months ago, rather, we had him, Roman, and Lashley teaming up, and it was more or less anything you can do, I can do better. In this case, he seemed to respect Braun if he, you know, disliked him. So there wasn't that issue of I wouldn't tag out.
Right.
It was more or less, I figure this guy at least is going to have my back for this match because he's an honorable man, given the fact he handed in the briefcase. So it made it even more devastating when he did what he did.
Absolutely. Go back to Tim. Any follow-up or additional comments? Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I noticed was, like, the way they had the Shield run out, like, separately, you know, seemed more like they were like, oh, no, we didn't expect this. So they came out to their own music, and they were both selling their matches from before, which was makes them more sympathetic, and they get beat up in a way that's like, oh, they weren't ready for this. And so they're, you know, even more in the babyface role, so to speak.
Yeah, good observation. I think sending them out one at a time, too, created, and again, it's just booking, it's just smart booking. If you're going for this, if you're aiming for it, it was 3-on-1 on both guys. So instead of coming out, and I mean, granted, there'd be no shame in Dean and Seth getting beat down 3-on-2. But 3-on-1, you're really establishing the Shield are the sympathetic characters this week. Unlike last week, where sort of a mixed bag. Well, Braun's trying to cash in on an exhausted Roman, so I'm going to side with the Shield. Brothers got to look out for each other. Or 3-on-1, that's not cool. That's not honorable, beating up Braun that way. So last week, there was ambiguity or contradictions. This week, pretty clear. The booking, we don't have to spend a week figuring out if the way it was booked led the crowd to boo Roman. I mean, led the crowd to boo Strowman because it absolutely did. I mean, the way that was booked is why, in the end, there weren't – no one was popping for Reigns at that point. So – or for Strowman beating up Reigns at that point. So, yeah, it's a fascinating turn of events heading into the Australian show and Hell in a Cell. Tim, anything else you want to say?
I just want to say thanks for all the years of content you've provided. I've been, like I said, a long-time listener, first-time caller, and I just have always appreciated it. I got in back when it was the $5.95 deal.
Oh, awesome. You are a legacy VIP member then.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Awesome. Tim, thank you for calling. I hope you don't wait another 7 years.
Yeah, I will not.
Okay,
thank
great.
You very much.
Thanks, appreciate it. Awesome. Always great to hear from new VIP members, who, especially longtime ones like that. All right, we'll keep going rapid fire here. Let's go to 706. I said 708, but my switchboard flipped on me there. 706, you're up, and then 708 on deck. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Brandon in Athens, Georgia. How you doing, Wade?
Doing great. We are all over North America today. Good to hear from Georgia. What'd you think?
Awesome. Well, I think Raw was up and down. Some of the usual suspects, some of the fat, you know, that seems to be inherent in these 3-hour shows. I think Roman and Strowman, I think it's pretty interesting. The ambiguity of the face heel dynamic is interesting. I think they're going to have a really good match in the Hell in a Cell, possibly. They seem to have had good chemistry in the past, and I have no idea who's going to win this. Who do you think is going to win at Hell in a Cell between them?
Rich, what do you think?
I think Kevin Owens is going to cost him the match, him being Strowman.
As a babyface or as a heel?
As a babyface.
Kevin Owens, babyface, Strowman, heel, crowd pops for KO, costing Strowman. Wouldn't that be fun to look back and go, all these seeds were planted all along that Strowman was actually the jerk. Kevin Owens can make that case. Kevin Owens costs.
If you look at his Twitter right now, he's erased his name again, and he only has two tweets. One tweet that's a cascade of four pictures of him winning titles in the WWE.
Yeah.
And the last tweet is every time Strowman has embarrassed him, throwing him off the cell,
wow,
slamming him on the aisle. So that's what made me think of that.
Interesting. It's all black. I just brought it up. Black circle, black landscape picture. Awesome. Did he delete all of his tweets?
Yep.
Well, that's crazy. What's he running from? What'd he say, like, 18 years
What's
ago?
What's he running from?
What'd he say 18 years ago that he did? All right, that's crazy. All right, man, he's going all in. This is awesome. Brandon, yeah, I think Rich prop maybe called it. But I think if not, either way, I think Reigns wins. I don't think after this long journey they're going to move the belt off of Roman unless they just feel there aren't, like, high-caliber heels for Roman to face. And so they just feel like, no, we got to get on a heel and have Roman and Seth and Dean chase. But you have the possibility of a Dean turn. You have Drew and Dolph now in a high, you know, raised up to the mountaintop, as they talked about in the promo early in the show. Corbin, by, you know, dominating Finn Balor and beating him, is being built up. I mean, I think that they think they're building him up. I'm glad that Jinder has been moved down a notch. I don't think we have to worry about Jinder against Reigns as a feud anytime soon. So yeah, my money would be on Reigns winning, but I mean, this is the big angle, so I can't rule out Strowman winning, but I think Rich's scenario makes the most sense.
Yeah, I think overall, yeah, Rich, that's a good point. I didn't think about the Owens factor, but yeah, I think Reigns will retain soon, simply because of his coronation finally, and this is his first defense on a pay-per-view. And yeah, I don't see them taking the belt off of him quite yet, but it should be an interesting match, and thanks for taking my call, Wade. I appreciate
cool.
it.
Hey, thank you for calling. Thanks, Brandon. All right, we'll go to 708 and then 419, and then we'll probably end there and head to our on-site correspondent who's standing by patiently. The night ran long tonight. 708, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. This is Vincent from Chicago.
Vincent, I will be in Chicago later this week for StarCast and All In.
I will not be there, unfortunately. I have to work, but
yeah,
glad you're going to be coming to our great city. I'm glad Rich brought up Kevin Owens because I had a whole different take on the Kevin Owens quit angle.
Yeah.
I thought it was a possibly a long story arc with the McMahons, because if I'm not mistaken, him headbutting and frog splashing Vince, did that ever get a clear, definitive end? Like, I know he had the match with Shane, and then I know Kevin Owens and Sammy had the match with Shane and Daniel Bryan at Mania, but I don't think that ever got a clear cut finish. So I thought that possibly it was Triple H and Stephanie or Vince maybe behind the scenes pulling strings, Geppetto-like, and you know, Braun throwing Kevin off the cage was essentially revenge for Shane's bump off the Hell in the Cell against Kevin Owens. And I just wanted your take on that. I think that it kind of ties in.
Rich, somehow. What do you think? Yeah, what do you think of Vincent's theory?
Well, the one thing I'm thinking about is Vince mentioned that is Shane still hates him. Stephanie tolerates him, which is why she hired him after he got fired from SmackDown. And Vince, I guess, should hate him. At this point, Linda's off the table. Otherwise, this would be a great opportunity to kind of bring back the McMahon in every corner situation. I think it's more or less, I don't think it's that complicated. I think it really is. One, I personally thought it was a nice in the week after they released Neville, they basically play out that storyline in real life on TV, which is something they like to do. And also, this reminds me of when R-Truth and Miz were quote unquote fired slash quit and interfered in the title match with John Cena, which was one of my favorite moments, even though it never really went anywhere, and wound up, you know, allowing themselves to be arrested as trespassers, which made so much sense that it hurt compared to some of the craziness we at times see now.
All right. I got to move to the next caller. Vincent, thanks for calling. We'll sneak in a quick comment here from 419 and then head to our on-site correspondent. 419, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, it's a VIP member Denny from Toledo. I just wanted to, go ahead and touch on, first I want to say Rollins is awesome selling his shoulder injury when he came down. I wanted to ask you guys, the match with him and Kevin Owens, I feel like it's phenomenal and it kind of got overshadowed by the angle at the end.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that match was enough to kind of rehab what was going on with Owens with the whole Braun segment? Cause you know, he looked really weak through the whole Braun feud. Do you think that this match, competitive match, awesome match with a guy of the caliber of Seth Rollins was enough to rehab the damage done to that?
I think it closed the distance quite a bit. I mean, whether it's, you know, 48% or 92% or 73%, I mean, we can debate that. But you can't be put out there against Seth Rollins, who, by the way, I mean, the announcing was deliberate and smart. Seth Rollins is having a great time. He's red hot. He's unstoppable. He's on top of the world. So they build him up as, if you can even hang with Seth right now, that's pretty good. So they just build up Seth big time before the match. Then Owens comes out, and before the match and as the match progresses, they really sell this as a desperate Kevin Owens. Like, this is a Kevin Owens who needs a win. He needs to erase this bad year that he's had with a win over Seth, and winning the IC title would do it. So they just raised the stakes. The fact that Kevin Owens hung with him for 23 minutes, lost, but did so in a way where the crowd was just, I mean, applauding the match. This is awesome. The announcers were not, you know, picking on Kevin Owens and bringing up his past as being this despicable character who deserves what he gets. The tone of the announcing suggested babyface turn. So if you're going to turn Kevin Owens babyface, having him go 23 minutes with Seth Rollins in just a killer match and then have him look sympathetic afterwards is, I think, a great way to do it. And I think people who have wanted KO to be a babyface for a long time probably are going to get their wish. There's so many times where there's the fake out, and sometimes I want to make sure I'm not clouded by the wishful thinking aspect of how I read what I'm watching. I think Kevin Owens would be a great babyface. He would add some depth to the Raw roster. on the babyface side, maybe too much if Roman actually gets over as a babyface relative to Strowman. But when you move Strowman off the map and you move KO into that spot, I mean, it is an even exchange. So anyway, yeah, Rich, your take.
I think one of the best things happening for Kevin right now, if this does come to fruition, is, and it's really unfortunate, Sammy being off the table for 8 to 9 months with the double shoulder surgeries prevents them from going into the rut of sticking them together. And with Sammy having been a heel, this gives Kevin an opportunity, because I think we've seen a lot of times with Vince, a lot of the characters that are his favorite types of faces are the ones that have, like, a Dean Ambrose is a great example. He's a face right now, and I'm sure he might be teetering into heelville, but he is aggressive. He's violent. You can see he's just unhinged. Owens can show that. And he doesn't have any of those features that kind of, as Sami Zayn famously said when he went heel, Vince said, just basically keep doing the stuff you do that's annoying to people. People equally Vince.
Yes, yes. All right. Any follow-up, Danny?
Not as far as that goes. As far as Roman goes, I just wanted to say that I've been the type that I feel like the die had already been cast on Roman. And I feel like the segment of the audience that boos him was always going to boo him. But I will say, the way they've been booking him lately, some doubt is starting to creep in my mind. I think that there's a chance. I'm not sold on it all the way.
Yeah.
But I do think that they've done a good job of booking him lately. And if they keep that up, there's a very good chance. But that's it, guys. And everyone should go VIP.
Thank you, Denny. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for your VIP membership.
Thank you.
Great comments from Denny. Yeah, I mean, it would take... perfect, not just perfect booking, but perfect announcing and perfect body language and everything to get some of the die is cast, I don't like Roman fans to switch. And I mentioned it last week. I did a Twitter poll. We had a big response. Are you willing post-SummerSlam to give Reigns a fresh look? And about half said yes. Now, most of that half said reluctantly. They will, but reluctantly. Like, you're gonna have to drag me into liking him or tolerating him or cheering him. But I'm open to it if they do things right. And less than 25% just said, absolutely they would. And then another half were just like, it's not going to happen. So I don't know. I don't know what we're watching, Rich. What's your prediction next week? Does the crowd does the crowd boo Roman like Toronto did at the beginning of the night? Or did something happen tonight that's going to lead to cheers next week?
I think they're going to still open with boos, but as he asserts himself and as the story kind of presents itself, it's going to be more inclined to cheer him based on what the people are doing. I think actions are going to do Roman more favors than words.
Yeah. All right. Very good. We're going to cut away here to a break. And when we come back, we've got our on-site correspondent standing by. This is going to be fascinating to talk at length with someone in the building who can fill us in on the evolution of the crowd response to Roman Reigns. All right, we are back, and we are joined by Joel. Joel, are you from Toronto proper, or did you drive in for the show?
I am from Toronto proper.
Excellent. Let's begin with this. How full was the building tonight?
I'd probably say about 95% full. A little bit of... uncovered action up at the top 300 where the hard camera would be, but otherwise everyone came out. It was a great time for that.
Wow, cool. Well, I'm glad you joined us today. We have questions for you.
Bring it on.
Yeah, so we heard from one caller in the opening part of the show who was in the building too. He just said the boos were intense for Roman at the top of the show, and by the end the crowd had been turned in a sense, or that Roman was the sympathetic character with a vast majority of fans who were siding with Roman and the Shield against Drew Dolph and even Strowman. Talk about that assessment of things, if you agree, and the evolution of it as the night progressed.
I definitely agree with that. At the beginning of the night, you could audibly hear the boos for Roman. Same thing happened last time. Raw ran through Toronto last year. It's the thing at the beginning of Raw, it seems, right? And then Toronto's going to be no different. But by the end of the night, I mean, I don't know if they were kind of, Toronto was just tired and beaten to submission, or if it was just that once you bring out the Shield, it's suddenly everyone's pro-Shield and therefore it's pro-Roman. But by the end of it, everyone was just kind of feeling, they were feeling that sympathetic edge for Roman and for the Shield by extension.
How did you feel on a personal level watching this all play out? Where were you at the beginning of the night on Roman? Are you part of the hashtag Never Roman crowd? Were you, I'm open-minded? Have you always been a fan of his? Where were you, and then how did that evolve as the night progressed?
I wasn't the biggest Roman supporter for the last little while, and then over the last, I say, year and a half, I've kind of turned my way. I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Roman supporter, but I think the guy is a really competent, good wrestler. I think he tells a good story. You know, his peers put him over. He's obviously a good, the person who plays Roman Reigns is obviously a good person, and that factors into my decision. It's he's not the first guy I'm going to run to go buy tickets to see, but I'm definitely interested when he shows up.
Rich, go ahead with a question about the Roman Strowman situation.
Sure. I noticed that they booed him when he came out for the beginning of the tag match, but then obviously, as Pete mentioned, the tide kind of changed. What were your thoughts toward the end? How did the in-house crowd react to, after the tag, Strowman kind of just standing there as the beatdown?
People, I thought, my section especially, they were confused. They didn't know if Strowman had pulled his hand back or if there was a tag and there was just some sort of like, oh, I'm not going to get in the ring. A bunch of us were actually looking at each other and saying, what's going on? And then next thing we knew, we saw the beatdown. It was kind of like, oh, okay, I think I know what's going on here. But yeah, that was kind of just the general feeling in my area, at least.
And the question we asked at the top of the show is, and I'll just ask you, from being in the building and watching it play out, without the aid of announcing and replays with commentary and all that, just being in the building and seeing the show presented to the live crowd, what did you witness tonight? Was it a deliberate heel turn of Braun? Was it Braun simply giving back what the Shield gave him last week? Just like he was willing to team with Roman, he was willing to side with Dolph and Ziggler to try to get revenge on the Shield. What was your take on what you think WWE intended the message to be?
See, here's what's interesting to me, is that when I saw Braun side with Dolph and McIntyre, that's when I said, okay, this feels more like a heel turn, because he's siding with these two guys who are obviously heels. And, you know, as the show kind of started, the whole cash in and announcing it, that we know we've talked about, is a babyface move. So, you know, at the end of the show, I was kind of wondering, well, does that mean that he's going to maybe pull back the briefcase? Or I guess not, because it's been announced that they're going to do the match. But no, that the way I felt was that since he sided with those two, we were going to see more of a heel monster.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it is kind of where I think that's where Rich and I are now on this, also talking it through. I don't know if there's really another option for how to take this. During the match when Roman was getting beat down by Dolph and Drew, had the crowd already decided they were with Roman against Dolph and Drew, or was it muted? Because, even before Braun turned, it didn't seem to me that the crowd was just viciously anti-Roman. Talk about his ring entrance the second time for the main event, and then also how the crowd reacted to him taking that beating.
Yeah, the crowd was definitely a different from when the show had started to when he came out. You're probably looking closer to, I hate doing this, so I'll just say 60-40, maybe closer to in favor of Roman. Again, I think people were getting tired at that point too. I know we're going to talk about the Intercontinental title match and what that did to the crowd, and we'll get there. But with that main event, everyone was really into what they were seeing, but they were really into getting that hot tag for Strowman. So really, Strowman was the reason people were watching so intently, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. For whatever it's worth, on pwtorch.com, not only do I do a live report on Raw and SmackDown, but also Zach Hadorn does his report on Raw on Monday nights to give a second perspective on things. And Jeff Vandrew Jr., shortly after Raw and SmackDown go off the air, does the top three developments column. And his take on this is pretty apparent. His headline is Braun Turns Heel. So I am curious if next week we see WWE hedge it all and try to make it seem like Braun is still a good guy who just, out of the convenience of the moment and the mission he's on, decided to team with Dolph and Drew, or if he really has kind of turned to the dark side and they're going to go all in now with him as a heel again. With WWE, I think they're going to stay the course with Braun as a heel, you know, standing here 45 minutes after the show ended. But I'm not sure, because sometimes you think you know what's happening, and the next week it turns out you thought they were geniuses, and it turns out they're, you know, they're just doing something unexpected and a sharp turn that actually doesn't make sense in retrospect. I don't anticipate that this time, but I'm leaving the door open that we're talking ourselves into something that isn't the story that they are actually going to tell long term. Rich, what do you think to that? And then you can also ask Joel a follow up on anything.
Sure. I think the big thing for me is figuring out where the heck they're going with this, because if this is just a respite, because they realize they're kind of like with the Greatest Royal Rumble, trying to book two big shows within a week and a half of each other, and this is the best way to set up what they need in both events. Or is this really like they hit pay dirt on this is the way we get Roman to be over as the top six? We just have to stack the odds so ridiculously against him, mm-hmm. despite this being, for most people, logically retaliation. I'm really interested to see where this goes. And then I also think, as my follow-up question, what was the response with the crowd live regarding SummerSlam and all of the SummerSlam-related activities coming to Toronto?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I mean, we're into it. We are very excited to be hosting SummerSlam. There were a bunch of signs in the crowd. The announcement, I think we saw it on entertainmenttonight.com. I think it was around maybe 5 o'clock tonight, maybe 4:30. And yeah, the second I saw it, I was excited for sure.
Let's talk about the Kevin Owens situation and the match with Seth Rollins. You talk about kind of plotting things out. You had Kevin Owens come out to cheers, but then kind of insult Toronto and side with Montreal. It's sort of one of those, you know, he's healing on us, but it's kind of a fun thing. It's not like vicious. I don't know what he said in French, but he seemed to be setting himself up as a heel. But by the end of this 23-minute grueling, but you know, really, really, really good TV match. Good match by any standard. He seemed like a sympathetic figure. The crowd wasn't chanting "na na na na" goodbye at him. It seemed like they respected him for the fight that he put in. Talk about the how you saw that match, and also just kind of how the crowd reacted to KO from the beginning of his promo to the little turn to Montreal against Toronto, and then having a really good competitive match, and then sitting in the ring and quitting.
So I have to say that watching Kevin Owens come out tonight, that pop was, to me, almost as big as the one that Seth had just received. I was talking to a friend who was actually watching on TV, and he said that it was more Seth than Kevin Owens, but in the arena, to me, it felt pretty even split. Owens cut an amazing promo, and when he started speaking French, so I do speak French, but I couldn't make out what he was trying to say because it was either too quick or just the arena acoustics. I'm not going to make excuses. I just didn't hear him. But next thing you know, everyone was booing, maybe just because he was speaking in French and that's not a Toronto thing, quote unquote. And he didn't go for hockey heat, which is something that is a Canadian thing. So I have to say, I'm glad they saved that for the Elias segment. But during that match, you could tell the crowd was a little torn as to who to cheer for. You had those hardcore Seth fans, and then you had those hardcore Kevin Owens fans. And when you have a Canadian in Canada performing the way that he does and that those two put on a match, it was really tough to watch, but an amazing match nonetheless. And then I got to tell you, there was actually, when they went to commercial, Owens takes a chair, he unfolds it, puts it in the middle of the ring, he sits down, and a bunch of people are looking. It's just a dark ring. They're playing stuff in the arena and just promotional material. And we're all waiting for KO to do some sort of dark promo. He doesn't say a word until the lights come up and we're live and you hear him say, "I quit." And everyone, just everyone reacted the way they should have. Just the booing and everything. It took the wind out of everyone's sail, but in the right way, I think.
Yeah, fascinating, fascinating. First of all, are you still at the building? I'm hearing background noise. I don't think the show's still going on, though.
No, it's gone. I took a walk, got a water, and I ended up in a hotel lobby.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I hope I'm still audible.
No, you're fine. Let's talk about the Elias segment as a bass player. I clicked on your link in your email. How do you feel about Elias's guitar playing? We got a bigger dose of it than usual tonight.
Yeah, I was surprised that they really let him go tonight. I forget it, maybe if it was someone who was on your show, Wade, or if it was another podcast I listened to, but someone had made the analogy that Elias is like that guy from college who says he plays guitar and kind of does it a half-assed. And I got to say, after what I saw tonight, you can tell he gets practice every single day and every night when they're on the road. But I was shocked that they let him go on for as long as they did. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So I assume you have an ear for that, and you're putting over Elias as coming along pretty well.
I have to say he did a wonderful job.
All right. Well, good. So what? Talk about the crowd reaction for Trish and also Rhonda and Natalia and how all that played out.
That was another segment I think that everyone was really, really into, and then it really tuckered everyone out. Once Trish came out, it was just nuts. Yeah, and when she made reference to, you know, her last match being in Toronto, I remember being there in 2006, I think, at Unforgiven, and it was insane. I had goosebumps thinking about that moment. And then having Rousey come out, everyone was super into it. I saw a lot of moms with their little girls who were wearing Ronda shirts. It was pretty cool to watch that reaction. And Natalya, believe it or not, despite being Canadian, didn't get as big of a pop as the other two women did.
Interesting. All right. Did anything about the segment not work?
Oh, maybe when they brought out Mickie James, and I just think that was because it was long enough ago that people aren't necessarily as tuned in to the history between Trish and Mickie.
Yeah.
I kind of saw it coming, just me being, I've been a longtime fan, but I think a lot of people were just kind of looking around and being like, what does she have to do with it?
I noticed the crowd was not into the end of B-Team and the Revival. They were really into chanting B-Team before the match, but they lost the crowd at the end. What happened there?
Oh, they weren't into the match at all. Yeah. Did you guys see the B-Team or Revival entrance on TV tonight?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Didn't feel like anyone was really into it. It felt like it was more of the B-Team music that was just piped through the speakers than it did the crowd reacting to anything.
Yeah.
And the Revival, I feel so bad for them because when they came to Toronto and they performed a takeover and it was that match with DIY and it was a triple set. I can't remember anymore. But when they were last in Toronto as a tag team, they tore the roof off and everyone was into it. This time, it kind of sucked for them not to get that same reaction. But I have to say, the promo that they gave afterwards, I was really a fan of. Not just as a Revival fan, but also just someone who just enjoyed kind of the way they use their words.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rich. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask, when it came to the Bellas, how did the live crowd react to them? Because I know I had several friends on Twitter who were none too pleased to see them involved.
They were booed, and I was pretty surprised to see it, but at the same time, I'm kind of not surprised. I think people are just kind of ready to move along, and we'll see. They're going to be in action next week, so we've been seeing, and I'm sure the match will be it'll be good. But tonight, people weren't really into it.
Yeah. How about both Dean Ambrose and Bobby Lashley? Talk about the crowd reactions to them coming out.
I have to say, I know I just said I feel bad for the Revival, but it's Bobby Lashley that I think I feel worse about. The guy went and had that backstage promo with Baron Corbin. The whole arm slap and does it again. Everyone loved it. Everyone laughed and they were cheering. And then he came out and they have Corbin and they do the whole, you know, you're facing two guys. And everyone just wanted to see two legit guys come out and face Lashley. But I assume we're going to build to Lashley and Corbin. But right now, just watching the Ascension come out, kind of everyone said, oh, it's just those guys.
And how about the reaction for Dean compared to Seth and Roman and anyone else on the show?
I didn't feel like Dean got the typical reaction that you would hear or see on Raw and that I heard other correspondents talk about.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was over with the crowd for sure. I don't know, maybe it's because it was that third hour lull and everyone was getting tired or because it was a match with Jinder Mahal who, you know, he's Canadian, but he's not outwardly Canadian on TV, so people are just kind of going with it.
outwardly Canadian. I love it. So were there any – did you get there in time to see any matches before Raw went on the air?
Yeah, I got there stupid early, to be honest with you. I got there around 6 o'clock and doors were open. I have a friend who works at the venue, so we just kind of met up and hung out for a few minutes. I did get to see main events. They taped Are You Ready for Spoilers, folks? We had No Way Jose versus Tyler Breeze, and No Way Jose got the win. And then we had Ember Moon take on Ruby Riott in actually a very good match that ended with Ruby Riott getting the win, doing the Riott kick off the top rope, pulling Ember off the top rope as she was going for the Eclipse.
Oh, wow. All right.
And yeah, it was a pretty cool move.
Did they advertise a match to help sell tickets, and did it occur?
So leading up to it, I kept seeing a promotional eight-man tag being tossed out there. I kept wanting to write it down, but I kept forgetting. I have to say it was probably some mix of The Shield with Braun and then adding in Corbin and Ziggler, McIntyre, and Finn, possibly. But again, I'm not 100% sure, and I'm sure someone's going to correct me on Twitter.
Yep, and it did not happen. Did Raw end when it ended?
No. Yeah, it ended. The three new bad guys went up and left the stage. The Shield kind of recouped and were angry at themselves and went up the stage, and then that was it, and they said, see you tomorrow.
And how much did you pay for your ticket, and are you happy with where you sat for the price?
So I got pretty lucky. I sat in what is considered limited viewing. It's lower bowl, probably as close to the staging as you can get, but I wasn't obstructed by any of the stage view. And I have tickets for tonight, and I have tickets for tomorrow night. Altogether for both nights, I paid $50, and that's Canadian. So wow. For you Americans out there, it's a little bit cheaper than that.
It's like $8. No, not quite.
Yeah, give it that.
Very good. Rich, do you have anything else that you want to quiz Joel on?
What was the reaction to Dana Brooks' flip?
Which one?
Because I was assuming, much like most of the backstage promos, you all got to hear her talk to Apollo about the fact she could do flips, and then her having done them in the ring was amusing to me at home, but I wasn't sure how much of that broadcasted to the audience.
I don't think people really heard it. I know I didn't really hear it, but the part when Apollo says, you know, who do you have at Toronto's finest to face tonight, and they... You know, they didn't exactly go that route, but it was entertaining enough for what that match was.
Well, Joel, I appreciate your time. Is there anything else that you want to share from the experience tonight?
It was a great time. I think I may have told you with merch, I sent you a tweet saying that there are a lot of Roman t-shirts out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, despite the crowd response, that's still a hot seller. A lot of Shield t-shirts, a lot of Seth Rollins t-shirts out there. Not as many Ronda Rousey t-shirts as I thought I would see.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
Yeah, but otherwise, great night.
Well, enjoy yourself tomorrow night, Joel, and thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. I know you had to wait a little longer because our switchboard's lit up.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Excellent. Thank you.
Have a good night.
Yep, you too. All right, we are back. It's time to get into the mailbag, but before we do that, Rich, talk about your show, the PW Torch Livecast Deep Dive, which is available on Saturday nights, is usually when it becomes available. It's part of the 7-day-a-week new show every day lineup at the pwtorchlivecast.com, or just search PW Torch to subscribe in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Stitcher and just about anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Rich, the Deep Dive is a cool concept. It's pretty different from anything else we do on the lineup. Talk about the concept for the show and some recent or upcoming shows.
Sure. So the Deep Dive is essentially a 1-hour look into one subject or related subjects. So it might not necessarily be reflective of the news of the week. For instance, one of my favorite episodes is one of the first I did where we looked and spent an hour diving into the career of Big Cat Ernie Ladd, from his time in the AFL as a civil rights icon to his time in the ring and his promos, despite some of the limitations he had with football and his massive girth. I thought that was a great show. So we jump around from that. I just did last week with Kylan Furlow, longtime Torch subscriber, a look into wrestler appearances on television shows. and kind of the favorite episodes that stuck out to us, why we enjoyed them, and were the wrestlers, in our opinion, at that time looking for a payday, looking for a way out of wrestling, or just looking for another avenue by which they can show their creativity. This week coming up is, since I'm going to be at Chicago as well for All In, I'm doing two parts. One, a preview. I still have to line up my guest host for that. But afterwards, I'm going to have an episode where I kind of intersperse calls and my experiences from All In with recordings. I'm going to bring my digital recorder with me and chat with fans and anyone I can grab, kind of like what we did at Access with Cam and I, and kind of get a kind of similar to what Colt Cabana has done the last few months with like a live diary of the experiences of the moment.
Cool stuff. I love the wrestlers on TV show concept. That's so cool. and I'm sure
Kylan had fun with it. He went into the kind of similar to a blow by blow of a match. He went into the plot summary, and we found that there was, much like a Hulk Hogan match, there was a formula to Hulk Hogan television appearances, which kind of ties into the stuff nowadays, because almost every time he appeared on a show, he would be there representing a children's, you know, the rec center that he supports in that local town, and the A-Team or the cast of Baywatch or whomever he was with were there to help donate money. And then magically the heels would show up and say they're going to turn it into an apartment complex. And off they went with whatever that episode was for an hour or, you know, 47 minutes after commercials.
Awesome. So people can check that out at pwtorchlivecast.com. Some of the shows are live with calls, and so you can find out when the next show is scheduled, and you can also download the shows there or just subscribe and search PW Torch. Rich, you're also part of the East Coast Cast VIP exclusive version with Travis. Give a little plug to that for people who are not VIP members who might want to join because of it.
Absolutely. First thing I would warn is not minivan friendly, as Wade has mentioned. This is typically, while I'm not one to use four-letter words, my partner Travis is a lot, and I typically yell at him a lot about things. And so while we talk about pro wrestling, we talk about a lot of other things. We'll talk about politics. We'll talk about my fear of going into the bayou. We'll talk about latest comic books or pop culture things that kind of offshoot from wrestling. It's really a stream of consciousness or unconsciousness, because usually it goes late enough that I at some point will fall asleep because Travis has no concept of time. But it is fun because I've done it for the last 3 years with him, and he's done it for the last 10 years. And, you know, having him there is like one of the and, you know, Wade won't toot his own horn, but I will. But having Travis is one of the few African-American pro wrestling journalists and audio analysts is something that's really an eternal inspiration to me, even though I'll never say that to him. In fact, I will ask that Wade marks this for edit.
Very good. Thank you, Rich. All right. Well, let's go to the mailbag. We got a ton of emails. It's funny because as they came in, they changed a little bit, which is in and of itself fascinating. Like Kermit said, "Hey, Wade, I'm still loving being a VIP member. Did you see Roman walk down to the ring?" He said this at 33 minutes into Raw. "Did you see Roman walk to the ring and fist bump the kid, but then turned his nose up at the grown man who wanted a fist bump? Like, I want to buy into him being a face, but he just can't stop seeming like he's better than every man over the age of 18. Roman, stop being a douche." So there is Kermit early on. You liked that, Rich.
I did, because I saw it as a preemptive strike. We've had, especially on the East Coast Cast, a number of fans and super fans who have talked about how, you know, for instance, I don't want to call people out, but we've had a caller once admit that he went to Access, paid the money to meet with Roman just to mean mug him in the picture and say, "This guy looks more excited to be with him than I do." And I was like, "Wait a minute, you just paid like $200 to meet this guy so you could take a picture to make it look like he's more enthusiastic to see you than you are to see him. Like, who's fooling who here?" And so I saw the adult, to me, if I were Roman's friend, I would tell him to do the same thing, because I felt like that dude seemed like the type of guy that would put the bump out and then pull it while they had it on television and have him look like the goober. So I just think discretion was the part of valor on Roman's part with that.
All right. So let's go to John M. from Ripon, California, VIP member also. He says, "Hey, Wade and Rich, I have no idea what is even going on. Last week, the Shield acts like heels, and now this week, Braun clearly did a heel turn. The only issue is nobody's going to boo the Shield, and nobody's going to boo Braun. beating up Roman is what got him over in the first place. I think it's just another failed attempt at trying to turn somebody heel who fans don't want to boo. Maybe aligning Braun with Dolph and Drew will help, but I doubt it. Why must storytelling be so difficult? I think a lot of people are and based on the emails coming in, I'm not going to read all of them because we did so much in the first segment on this, but I do think people were kind of confused because I don't think a lot of people thought, and some did. I mean, I've heard some say it, but I don't think the majority or even any close to the majority thought that the solution Vince was going to go to is a hard, decisive heel turn for Braun. And when you're watching the show and Braun is totally just being Braun, and he also does the babyface gesture of cashing in money in the bank and going, I want you one-on-one without your shield buddies getting involved. Total babyface segment. That's what babyfaces always do. I want you in a cage so your friends or your manager can't interfere. One-on-one. I know I can beat you one-on-one. So that's totally babyface. And it's coming off of a week where Braun, even if he was cashing in when Roman was beat down, was beat up 3-on-1, and WWE was totally neutral. They didn't show their hand. They never said, well, Braun, you know, says he's being honorable, but, I mean, come on, Roman's beat down. You can't blame the Shield members for coming out to help him. They didn't do that. So you had none of the groundwork being laid. Now, you could say WWE didn't want to foreshadow. They wanted it to be a shock. But what he did to Roman was a beating, and it was 3-on-1, but it was a reverse of the previous week. And it wasn't, like, vicious. It was just kind of Braun being Braun. You know, it was power slams. The headbutt was kind of heelish. But it wasn't like just like a total change in persona. So I do think some people are looking at this just thinking, are we for sure supposed to be Braun? And strategically, is WWE intentionally not being heavy-handed about it because they want fans to think that they arrived at the place that they arrive at on their own without being manipulated? So those are just some of the thoughts that come to mind. And I think John, you know, saying, well, I don't think people are going to boo Braun. I'm not convinced that they won't, but I think it's an absolutely valid question to have going into next week and the week after.
And given their immersive environment with the social media now, it's always fun for me to pay attention within a half hour or 45 minutes of Raw, depending on when people get back to their phones or the media manager finally hits send on the Hootsuite that they timed. Braun put a tweet out, and I said it to you. He said, eye for an eye, Roman.
Yeah.
Hell in a Cell, monster payback. And so is this a one-off? Are they going to, you know, be BFFs and show up in the same locker room? Or is this going to be something like with Jericho where Braun's constantly looking at his allies as just beneath him? Or is it going to be something where they do make a bit of a faction out of this and their mutual admiration for destroying the Shield and then picking up the carcass in terms of the Intercontinental and Universal titles?
Yeah, it is. It is. That doesn't, I don't know. I mean, do you take that tweet as just cementing your opinion or softening it?
I think it softens it because yeah. I thought it was just hard heel turn. I'm just leaning into this. I'm an evil dude now. I think it's more or less more ambiguous. And I still tie into what I think about Kevin Owens. I think he's going to be a guy where he is tired of Braun and he's just going to be as vicious as he can to him and kind of force Braun again back into that heel role. Because you can't really have a month and a half of Braun destroying Kevin. And then you turn it around and Kevin's the face and Kevin's still getting destroyed.
Well, somebody said in response to your tweet that Braun is becoming a Big Show. You know, where they just turn him when they need him to. Is Braun going to be kind of that utility guy? He's Braun. He's not a heel. He's not a face. Or are they going to really try to make him a heel?
I would just make him a force of nature.
Yeah.
Braun, like you said, Braun is same with Brock. The way they had him before, they made him the gentleman who I'm surprised you didn't comment on this one, because the one thing they did wrong going into Roman's introductory promo to kick off the show was highlight how Roman, unlike some people apparently, will be working on Labor Day.
yes, that is funny.
Like, oh wow, man, you're working on a national holiday. Good for you, buddy. I hope you're getting time and a half at least.
Like every wrestler ever since Raw started.
Right. You know, it's like, is it going to be Roman against no one? And so to that point,
Braun is in a situation now where you stick him out there and he could be whatever you want him to be. He'll be that force of nature. You'll be afraid of him. You never quite know. Kind of like how Bruce always mentions the idea of the outlaw wrestler. You never quite know where you stand with him. If you watch the old A-Team, he's that Howlin' Mad Murdoch. Is he on the team? Is he not? Is he going to jump out of the back of the van? Is he going to crash the plane? You don't know. You just know that Braun's there for now, and you'll accept it.
All right, so we'll go to John P. from Cleveland, Ohio. So in this past week, WWE has turned their two biggest natural baby faces to heels. Why? Becky and Braun were both fan favorites, organically for different reasons. Charlotte and Roman are now linked more than ever as two chosen ones. Vince's war with the fans has gone too far. This is taking all the joy out of the business. It's really not that hard to get right. Roman and Charlotte as the arrogant, entitled second-generation heels, and Braun and Becky as the scrappy heroes of the common fan equates to big money. Instead, we get this nonsensical booking. It just really sucks. So, not universal praise by any means for this. Not, you know, people softening on how they feel about Roman. What they're doing with Becky, is it fair to compare what's going on with Braun to Becky? Is that a valid comparison?
I would say absolutely. Like I said earlier, it was really weird to me that right as that tag match was getting touted at 10 o'clock at night, you had Cesaro putting up a picture of him, Becky, and Sheamus just at a bar. Well, not at a literal bar, but it looks like some sort of set. And then, you know, Becky had sent a message to WWE because they had put up a poll similar to yours. Did you support Becky Lynch the entire time she was trying to become champion on SmackDown? And she responded, maybe you should ask yourself the same thing at WWE. And between that and her, I don't think too many people have talked about the interview she did last week after SummerSlam, where she said she really just put her cards on the table. Is it because I have red hair? Is it because I don't have implants? Why am I not the person that can be the person that leads SmackDown's women's?
Is your take on that? If the goal is for Becky to be the heel, she shouldn't be saying that, and WWE should think that's the wrong approach? Or do you think on some other level it makes sense and they're all in sync?
I think it's the opposite. The more you do it, even the tweet after that one where she retweeted her interview, the difference between me and you wait until my back is turned. I wait until you can look in your eye. The same thing you could say about what we just saw tonight. While Roman did catch a headbutt, he didn't hit him from behind with the headbutt. He hit him, picked him up, and hit him right in the face. He knew what was coming. And it's weird. It makes everything, the waters are muddy. You don't need the waters to be muddy, though. In the case of Roman, it looks like it's kind of helped.
All right. I don't like having to wait 3 weeks to get Todd Martin's take on this, since he's about 2 weeks. But I'm very curious for his take once this has a chance to play itself out. All right, so Harrison from Coconut Creek, Florida, says, toward the end of the show, I was ready to call out WWE when Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose would come out in their Shield gear to attempt to help Reigns. This would be stupid, of course, since there would be no reason for the two to have changed into their gear and would have meant they could have taken the time to change while Reigns was getting beat down. Much to my surprise, they resisted the stupidity urge to do that here. So, good job on a straighten-your-time moment, WWE. So I think that's a great comment. It would have been really dumb if Dean and Seth came out in Shield gear when there would be no reason for them to be dressed up as a Shield unless there was like some photo op after Raw that they'd have to explain retroactively. But it would look dumb. So it's not the greatest compliment, but WWE, good job not being stupid, says Harrison. And I agree.
See, I would disagree with you and Harrison because I wish I had the artistry to denote the scene in my head. I feel like at every wrestling event that the Shield are at, there's an in case of emergency break glass vest right before you get out of Gorilla.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, you know, they don't have their clothes. Hey, it's no problem. You break that, you put it on, you're fine.
All right. Andrew says, I really think Roman Reigns needs a new entrance song. I think audiences have conditioned themselves to immediately boo as soon as it starts, and changing it up might make things a little easier on Roman. I also think it would help the Shield as a unit if the natural response to their music wasn't booing. What do you think of that? Is it time to freshen it up, or is that giving up if you're Vince McMahon? Not that he's not willing to go to extremes to get Roman over, And, you know, they did change Seth Rollins' music to get a different kind of reaction at the beginning. Would it make sense for a change-up with Roman now that he's Universal Champion and the Shield are back together? So save that music for when the Shield are coming out collectively.
I think the best time would have been when they did the first reunion, because that would have been a nice break. It's very clear a lot of times with WWE when people say, how can you tell this person's chosen, this one's not? When you look at wrestler, you look at Dolph. Dolph is on like version 30 of the theme song he got after AJ and Big E became his like click. Drew, since he came up, has had two versions of the music he had when he was in NXT, which was a change from his awesome music when he was first in WWE. Everyone else has had music. All even Seth has had the Burn It Down at it just because he was an arsonist in a video game and that got over.
Yes,
like people forget that part. Like, yeah, he burned everything to the ground.
That's that was hilarious.
And Roman the Cheese stands alone with the Shield music. Now the only difference was, I mentioned on the East Coast Cast last week, it was jarring to hear the Sierra Hotel India Echo Lima Delta, because I was like, wait, Roman's already in the right, that was all of them. And so if they do drop it, it would have to be something that's a hard pull away, and I don't even know what that music would be. Like, what can you think of? Something like, it's not going to be smooth jazz. It's not going to be something.
No, I vote for smooth jazz. Let's do that. Let's get a movement going. Smooth jazz Roman Reigns.
Get Kenny G out here, stat.
Just put the NXT crew in charge, and it'll be good. It'll help. I don't have to pick the song. It can be you know, a song that's commercial that works, but it just make one up from scratch that fits where he is right now. You know, it can be a takeoff on Ricky Steamboat's music. You know, he loves his family and he works diligently, and I work on Labor Day. I have kids who I'm good to when I go home. I like, you know, whatever. I mean, you can have fun with it. All right.
Yeah, oh my God. You don't know how many nerves you touch. I love that song so much. And I don't know how many people have actually heard it. I mean, he's a family. I felt like that was an 80s sitcom that was waiting to happen. Like, just Ricky Steamboat, every time he comes home from wrestling, he's got like a life lesson to teach his kids. And meanwhile, Ric Flair is up. Well, I mean, that really was kind of cutting a little too close to home, but that's a conversation for a different day.
All right. Chris from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, who called in and got cut off. He said, I wanted to add two quick points. How did the graphics team have the work done for Roman versus Braun when it had only been here a few minutes? I think they work fast. I mean, we're talking about straighten your time moments. I'm not sure I'm going to get on their case for that. I guess that was working pretty fast, but let's just say they can work fast. Two, if you're going to do a handicap match, why is it the two-man team who work face locks? I was fine with the Ascension actually being the team. I mean, it's not good for the Ascension, but, you know, Bobby beating two guys who are big and doing so decisively, when it's Corbin trying to, you know, surprise him and blindside him with something that's not an insurmountable task, but certainly an inconvenient challenge that Bobby wasn't expecting. I thought it was just fine. It was a way to fill TV time and advance Bobby's character.
Yeah, this wasn't the labor of Hercules. This was a trip to the DMV. So I think that's fine building up to whatever they're going to do. As much as I dislike Corbin in his Applebee's vest wrestling, I do enjoy. Nothing tickled me more than Vince McMahon forgetting to remind the referee during matches what the stipulations were, depending on what he needed. So having Corbin bring that back was fun tonight.
Excellent. All right, we're going to change topics here and go to Trish Stratus. Tim B says, I'm probably making too much of nothing here, but Trish's promo delivery seemed really odd to me. It was lacking a certain energy that we typically hear in promos and kind of undercut the excitement of the moment for me. Did you catch this? Do you think it's just ring rust or mic rust? I've thought that's always been a downside of Trish. I always thought that she didn't bring the energy on promos, that there was an odd cadence to her speaking. And maybe it's because it's Canada. but there's something about her cadence that is different, and her inflection and projection of her voice has never been great. I mean, that was not her thing. And so that was I mean, I noticed that too, and I made a comment in my report on PWTorch.com covering Raw with my Reddit report. I thought that, you know, it was odd. I don't think it hurt. Damaged the segment greatly, but it is important to, you know, hear what's being said and to feel that the person has some energy. She just has a more dry, laid back delivery, and it is just who she is.
To me, I joked with Travis and Cam about this in a group chat we had, and it's Trish has been home in Canada for a number of years now, and I don't know if you have family. I mean, you have a Midwestern kind of accent. A lot of my family, my wife's from Pittsburgh. She doesn't have a strong Pittsburgh accent, but a lot of her family members do. I think it's just Trish has been home for 10, 15 years, and she has now kind of like the I think of Betty White when she was playing the woman from St. Olaf on Golden Girl. She has this very distinctive Canadian mom accent now.
Canadian mom, yeah.
And you can't shake it because she hasn't been Trish Stratus, the international model who had to kind of hide some of those voice inflections, which to me, with the benefit of hindsight now, I always thought Trish's promos might have been a little static because she was trying so hard to hide the accent, to keep the diction kind of. And now it's the other way where it's more stilted because she's leaned in so totally into the Canadian accent that it kind of made things awkward. And so when she did say some things, maybe the way they were rating it, it came out, the delivery just came out so weird. You could juxtapose that when Kevin Owens switched into French to the Toronto crowd, that was more Quebecois French, not like, right. So that was a very, like, I had just gone, my wife and I went to Quebec a few weeks ago. And so that's a very different French, and that's a very Canadian French. So as soon as they heard that, it was almost like, I haven't heard hissing in a while in pro wrestling, but you could just feel the natural inclination for the Ontario people to just lose their, like, how dare you bring this into our area? So I think with Trish, she's doing that to our American ears, and it's kind of like the NAFTA of our wrestling fandom.
All right, let's go to Nick in Bradford, PA. He goes, Wade, I'm sick of the feminism narrative being driven by WWE. They can showcase the talents of female wrestlers without the Stephanie emasculation trope. I enjoy women's wrestling, and I'm looking forward to the pay-per-view, but it doesn't have to be a storyline with a feminist narrative. Am I being cynical to think WWE is trying to cash in on the Me Too movement? And also, while on the topic of the women's division, with Rousey as champion, the only realistic challenger would be Shayna Baszler, unless they get a crazy Luna Vachon-type character. There happens to be one. I think Rosemary would be a great fit here, and I think she owns the IPs to her gimmick. She could do something with the Wyatts because after Hardy has to retire, Bray will need his family back. Go VIP, and if you do, Roman will be a heel, and Becky will be a white-hot babyface, and WWE will make sense again. So PWTorchVIPinfo.com if you want to take up the advice of all the VIP members who have called in and emailed. Rich, did you see more of that tonight, even in the way that Trish addressed Finn Balor, not Finn Balor, Baron Corbin? Did it come across that way at all to you?
Well, I don't know if feminism is the right thing to rail against. I think the rights of women in wrestling is something that's pretty clear. I think what's ham-fisted in it is the fact that the McMahons dole themselves as the arbiters of freedom for all women. Like, there's Sojourner Truth in pro wrestling trying to lead these women to freedom, and that's very dumb and very corporate, but that's what they do. If anything, I feel like you can do it's kind of like, again, that too cute by half. You can have Trish mention, you know, what I didn't imagine almost 20 years ago was that I'd have an opportunity to have an all women's pay-per-view. That's great, but then you can't go triple crazy with the Bellas now somehow just happen to hang backstage. Like, okay, if you're ready for a tune-up match next week, why didn't you have one this week? Why didn't you come out when Mickey James and Alexa Bliss, who, again, Alexa Bliss is another example because she's leaned into the Ohio, like, I need to speak to your manager voice that she's like channeled now. He's like, don't, when she told Trish, you know, it's true. I replaced you. I am the new you. Look it up. It's yes. Like she went from Mean Girls, like she was doing with Nia, to this, yeah, this quasi, like, just, ugh. And it's great for her. It's awesome. But I don't feel like feminism is the thing that's doing it here. I think, and Stephanie, I've been one to say it
but I feel like it's also unfair because when Shane did stuff like that, we didn't make it seem as if Shane was taking the legs out from under the wrestlers. But I completely
get I did.
Oh, of course. I mean, yes.
But I think what people have a distaste for is that if Stephanie's taking something that's a cool thing and turning it into a corporate event, a corporate bragging point that they're marketing and they're marketing it in such a heavy-handed way that it takes away just the joy of wanting to be happy for the women wrestlers, because it seems like the women wrestlers are just props in a story that Stephanie is telling for the benefit of the corporation and their image with advertisers and stockholders. I don't think it's anti-feminism as much as it's anti-feminism being used as this heavy-handed, over-the-top thing that they're pushing constantly when they talk about Evolution and have the women talk about it.
That's fair. But I would also point out that we kind of all know what time it is when her husband also is pulling out literally every living Hall of Famer to remind everyone the importance of the match that we've seen 5 times already.
I love it. It's so Triple H.
It's wild. It's wild that both of them at the same time are at different ends of the spectrum of self-aggrandizement. And you really can't choose on a weekly basis who is topping who.
I mean, Hunter can be a parody of himself sometimes. A parody of the image that people point out. Yeah, I don't even know how to put it. I mean, it is sort of like he just, are you serious? You know, like and he had the reputation, you know, and in a way more power to him. I mean, he was a guy who was staying over time and sitting in that truck and meticulously making sure that his video was edited the way that he wanted it. And, you know, we've had ex creative team members on talk about, you know, Hunter being like, okay, I'm going with it. And then at the last second, you know, I have this idea, and it, of course, leads to him being in a better spot, but he presents it, you know, pitches it as, you know, well, I'm just saying, you know, maybe this would be better, and here's why, kind of the late pitch to change things. So, I mean, yeah, having all these people. And again, I mean, I'm not even against it on principle. It's just funny because it just happens to happen with Hunter. But I like the idea of, you know, if you're going to do the match, make it out to be a big deal. Don't just do it and not make it a big deal. So if you pitch the concept generically to me, I like it. When you put Triple H in there, it's sort of like of course it was going to happen.
And I mean, the thing that got me last week, and you and Bruce talked about it, I got Vince McMahon on the phone. And he's like, there's a match with the Taker in Australia. Do you want it? It's like, what do you mean call? He could have just tapped you on the shoulder when you were both back there. Like, well, come on. Like, we're not dumb. You, every takeover, you're taking pictures in the back, pointing like the proud papa with the kids who got the soccer award. And now you're making it seem like you were in a, you know, out in the mountains somewhere lifting, and Vince sent you a conk that said, you know, it's time to fight the Undertaker again. Come, let's not go this too far.
Hunter should have said, I hadn't been so flattered since I heard the promoters in India badly wanted me to headline against gender. It's like, just come on. Anyway. Okay. Duncan from Hamilton, New Jersey. Did they really need to have Baron Corbin point out that he was about to make a main event, quote, no one could predict, only to get my hopes up for a swerve and then make the obvious match? I hate it when WWE ironically draws attention to its own flaws. Thanks again for all the great content. Thoughts? My 35th birthday gift is going VIP, and it is living up to the hype. Awesome. Well, we hype VIP, but we also hope to live up to it. So that endorsement means a lot. I appreciate it, Duncan. Yeah, I got my hopes up, too, that he was going to throw something out there that was unexpected, you know, that no one would think of. But I will say, in his defense, he's a heel. He's supposed to, like, boast more than what, you know, he shouldn't live up to his boasting. Like, he shouldn't deliver on his promise. He should seem like he's overselling something.
Yeah, Baron Corbin looks like the kid in class who's waiting for someone else to speak up so he can say he had that exact idea for a project.
Yes. All right. We have two KO questions, and we'll wrap up maybe after that, or maybe I'll sneak in one more here. All right. Jeff from Colorado. I remember in 2011 when CM Punk walked out after Money in the Bank. There were dreams he'd show up and as a superstar at ROH or something. Just kidding, yes, that he would show up to wrestle in other promotions. Sadly, it never happened. How great would it be to have Kevin Owens actually show up at All In? Okay, it's never going to happen, but I can dream, can't I? Maybe not an official question above, but seriously, could you ever see a Triple H run WWE authorizing such reality into storytelling? Always happy with everything VIP. although I'm not sure how I'll survive these upcoming weeks without my all-new, all-fresh The Fix with Todd Martin. Go VIP, everyone. By the way, we have some very cool shows coming up on Wednesdays for The Fix, even if Todd will not be responding to current events in wrestling. So some good content we would not have gotten to otherwise if Todd didn't decide to globetrot for a couple weeks here. I have to honestly say it hadn't crossed my mind until that email that Kevin Owens quitting could free him up to go to All In and be part of it. I would not rule it out. I thought it was interesting. Jeff Jarrett, he's running Nashville Fairgrounds, NWA 70th anniversary. He's suing TNA and Impact Wrestling, but at the same time participating on Triple Mania with a bunch of guys who are working with Impact Wrestling. Like the traditional walls are not there. And so if Hunter's willing to put Jarrett, a recent Hall of Famer, on TV at the time that he's promoting, you know, NWA and participating in other groups, I mean, is it completely out of the realm of possibility that Kevin Owens shows up in Chicago, either just in the crowd or as part of an angle or a special appearance or match?
I'm not going to put any money on it, but given the fact that, I mean, Jericho's been telling anyone who will listen the last few weeks about the story of him telling Vince about All In, and Vince saying, well, geez, I wish they would have called me. I could have told them September's a horrible month for booking. And how ridiculous in my head of, you know, even the Young Bucks mentioned when they were on Talk is Jericho, like, yeah, we don't have Vince McMahon's number. How are we going to call him? And Cody was just flabbergasted. But it also makes sense. If they were down with something like that, I could see it. But I'm going to err on the side of no, because the closest they came to this was, again, as the writer mentioned, CM Punk showing up at San Diego Comic-Con with the WWE title as a quote-unquote outlaw, when they could have gone that next step. And I don't think they're dumb enough to take the Bischoff route with Pillman and, like, hey, we'll really fire you, and it'll be fun.
Well, if they – here's the thing. If Kevin Owens is not advertised ahead of time and showing up at All In helps their storyline, and if the goal is for Kevin Owens to be a babyface – what better way to turn Kevin Owens' babyface than to go stand in the ring with the Young Bucks or Cody or Kenny Omega and be involved in that at all in? And on a meta level, it's good for WWE's business to look like they're playing nice, that they're not, you know, do it. And if WWE is going to bid for Cody and the Bucks and Omega big time, well, this is right up Vince's pattern. I mean, he was putting the Von Erichs on his TV show before. And, you know, Ric Flair, who he hoped to sign, and others, Vince will give attention to people who he and give a little rub or a little wave of the magic wand and acknowledgement and a tip of the hat and all those things to wrestlers that he hopes to acquire or expects to acquire. So you win some meta points with ardent fans because you actually sent help, but of course you deny it. But everybody knows you did. And then Kevin Owens scores points as a babyface for showing up at the cool show on Saturday in Chicago. And it doesn't help sell tickets or pay-per-views because you're not advertising it ahead of time. So it's sort of win-win-win. I mean, you can make that case, other than you're taking a contracted wrestler and putting him in someone else's hands. And that can be dangerous just from a kind of liability or standpoint, I guess.
Well, looking at the four gentlemen in question, that wouldn't be necessarily the least. That wouldn't be as worrisome because they've already said and kind of put that spike in the ground that they want to negotiate as a group. And as you said, what better way to kind of give them the Trojan horse of Kevin Owens? You have this guy who Arden fans will love. You have – I mean, go one step further. Have him show up in one of his Kevin Steen pro wrestling T-shirts and – just completely lean all the way into this quote unquote. I know you hated the Triple H version of this quote unquote reality era, and just have all the tweets and, you know, have someone sell it. I obviously Vince shouldn't, because that'll kind of give the ghost away, but have, you know, like a New Day, like that would be perfect. All you would need is him show up at All In and Xavier Woods does the eyeballs emoji with a quoted tweet.
There we go. All right, another KO email. Patrick from Orlando says, having known that KO has thrown the stunner before, something Stone Cold has called him out on, I sat in anticipation thinking, hey, he seems to be going all out. I wonder if he'll do the stunner. And then he does it. I pop vocally, a rarity, and my once sleeping pregnant wife is upset. But it was worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Good match. I love it. I woke up my sleeping wife, but it was worth it. I think doing a stunner, you know, is, I mean, it can be a heelish move, but I think it's a nod to Stone Cold. And you know, it added to the idea that he was just fighting his heart out because he needed this match.
Yeah, and when you think about Stone Cold especially, Owens has mentioned both to you and to Steve Austin himself and, you know, in an interview that Austin was one of the biggest influences to him in that little short airplane or airport conversation that kind of kept him going. So I would say, especially if he thinks this is all I got and this is my last shot, and especially when you follow up with what happened after on the way out, you get to give an homage to one of your heroes, and I don't see a problem with it.
All right. Rich, we will end on that note. Thank you so much. Great conversation. We had a lot more to talk about than I anticipated going into the show, and we had a lot more to talk about than I anticipated after 3 hours of the show by the time it was over. But I enjoyed this Raw. I thought it was really good from start to finish.
I did too. And to our point before we leave, Steve actually quote tweeted it and said, very interesting to Kevin using the stunner.
Ah, okay, cool. Excellent. So check out Rich Fan on social media. Rich, how do people follow you?
Sure. @Rich_FANN. I have to do that because the other person in the world that's named Rich Fan refused to give up the name.
And do you resent him for it? Like, I mean,
I kind of do because I asked him politely on LinkedIn for it. And he's like, it helps with my brand. He's an engineer, a computer engineer, and he doesn't use Twitter.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just sitting on it, my dude. Come on, Rich.
It would have been nice. Yeah. Well, we can Twitter shame him for not generously giving it up. But Rich_Fan, it's fine. We will support the underscore version of you. Check you out on Saturdays on the Deep Dive with Rich Fan at the PW Torch Livecast lineup. So search PW Torch or go to pwtorchlivecast.com. Awesome. Rich, it's been a pleasure. Great to have you back on.
Always a pleasure to be on, Wade. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, so tomorrow I'll be joined by Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net to analyze SmackDown. So join us live if you can on the live stream at WadeKellerPodcast.com. You can also find the direct link to the live stream on my SmackDown report at PWTorch.com. Same thing during Raw every Monday. There's a direct link if you want to stream the show live and listen in. We're usually streaming live within 3 to 5 minutes of the show ending. And so Jake will join me and we'll talk SmackDown. And then on the Thursday flagship this week, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net makes his every 3 week appearance on the show to co-host the flagship. And we will have a lot to get into. So be sure to join us then for that. We'll certainly talk about Raw, SmackDown, WWE issues, but also cover the whole gamut of hot topics in professional wrestling, WWE and otherwise, as we head into StarCast and All In Weekend. It's going to be fascinating. For VIP members, we'll be live. In fact, we're kicking off StarCast Weekend with a Bruce Mitchell audio show live at 5 Central at the hotel where StarCast begins. They've taken over the hotel, and we will be in the hotel greeting people as they arrive for the start of the weekend with a blockbuster edition of the Bruce Mitchell VIP audio show. To hear that show, you can watch it live on Fight TV and different distribution, different ways it's being distributed by Conrad and the StarCast team. But you can also listen as a VIP member and download the show as a podcast on the PW Torch VIP feed. Bruce and I will also be part of the 4-Star Summit podcast with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez from the Wrestling Observer and Figure Four, and that will be taking place on Friday. So we got a big weekend planned. We're a big part of the StarCast festivities, and I'm looking forward to attending All In Chicago and meeting a lot of VIP members. So if you're going to be at All In, let me know and certainly come up and say hello if you see us before or after our podcast, or just see me roaming around, which I hope to have time to do. I really want to roam around and take in some of the other live podcasts at StarCast. So check us out in Chicago. And if you aren't following me yet on Twitter, please do @TheWadeKeller, and follow our brand @PWTorch. It's the same thing on Instagram, @PWTorch. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/PWTorch. You can also friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/WadeKellerTorch. Be sure to keep up to date on professional wrestling, live TV show coverage for WWE Raw and SmackDown, and live pay-per-view coverage. We'll have live All-In coverage. Sean Radican, longtime PW Torch staffer, will be covering All-In on the website on Saturday Night Live. And we also have all the other TV shows covered. So check out pwtorch.com to keep up on shows you're not watching or see what our writers have to say about shows that you are watching. Plus flashbacks, specialist articles, editorials, and so much more. Check it out. If you attend a live wrestling event, please send us results. pwtorch at pwtorch.com. You can see examples of what we've been doing for decades. We're correspondents either by regular mail back in the olden days, or where they type up reports on a sheet of paper and then fold it three ways into an envelope and lick the envelope and put on a stamp and write out the address and send it to us. And then I would retype it on a typewriter and print it up on the newsletter. Then we got fancy with fax machines and then email. And now people are doing it on their phones at the building itself or on their laptop later in the night or the next day. We're always looking for results of shows. So tell us who beat whom and a little details on each of the matches, what you thought of them, what the finish was, how the crowd reacted, all that good stuff. And we'll publish it on pwtorch.com. You can also check out pwtorch.com and catch up on what's been going on at house shows and other live events. We also have TV taping reports for NXT, NXT UK, Mae Young Classic, and on and on. So many reasons to make pwtorch.com a multiple daily stop. Create that home screen button on your phone or a tab on your browser or bookmark us or just type us in, pwtorch.com. And of course, subscribe not only to this, the Wade Keller Post Show, but also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast later in the week. That includes the flagship and our Interview Friday shows. That's the blue logo shows later in the week. These are the red logo shows where we live stream a portion of the show earlier in the week following Raw and SmackDown. As always, give us a 5-star rating, if you don't mind, in Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to podcasts where they have star ratings where you can rate podcasts. We really appreciate that. It does make a difference. If you can do that for both the red brand and the blue brand, that would be tremendous. And you heard some endorsements for VIP membership. If you haven't checked it out yet, go ahead and check it out at pwtorchvipinfo.com. You can find out full details on what a VIP membership comes with. It's a ton of VIP-exclusive podcasts. These shows are ad-free and plug-free. The Wade Keller Post shows and podcasts, the PW Torch livecasts are presented ad-free and plug-free. Ad-free access to our website, immediate access to thousands of podcasts dating back not only to 2004 when we started doing wrestling podcasts for VIP members, but even prior to that, retro radio shows from the 1990s with new episodes going up every Thursday. Hundreds of episodes have been posted from radio shows in the 1990s covering professional wrestling, and over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter with a new edition every week. So check out details. If it sounds like it's something for you, PW Torch VIP Info will tell you more, and you can then click on the sign-up form. It's mobile-friendly, and become a member within about 2 minutes of hearing these words. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Until tomorrow, thank you, Rich Fan. Thank you, callers. Thank you, on-site correspondent Joel. Thanks to those who emailed, and thanks to all of you listening. Until tomorrow, Wade Keller signing off. Please keep us in mind when you're about to shop at Amazon. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the Amazon logo on that page, and it takes you right to the Amazon homepage. But that two-second detour by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon means we get a commission on whatever you buy on that shopping trip. So every single time you're going to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.